Welcome to 2015, and welcome back to the Religious Studies Project. I'm one of your hosts, David Robertson, and with me
is the other one, who is called Christopher Cotter.
And Chris, can you believe our fourth year of broadcast?
Really can't believe it. It's been a fun 3 years thus far, and I think the way that 2015 is shaping up so far, it's going to be a pretty good year.
Indeed. We'll talk a little bit more about that after the episode, but fitting that you should be kicking the year off, and great to be kicking it off with a friend of ours, a friend of the project, Afe Adugami, talking about African Christianity in the West. Take it away, Afe.
I am here at the School of Divinity in the University of Edinburgh in the office of Afe Adugami, who I'm speaking to today. Dr. Adugami is Senior Lecturer in World Christianity and Religious Studies here at the University of Edinburgh, and he holds a PhD in the History of Religions from the University of Bayreuth in Germany, where he served as Teaching and Senior Research Fellow before joining the University of Edinburgh in 2005. And his broad research interests include interrogating new dynamics of religious experiences and expressions in Africa and the African diaspora, with a particular focus on African Christianity and new indigenous religious movements, the interconnectedness between religion and migration, globalization, politics, economy, media, and the civil society. And he has an extensive list of relevant publications. You know, I've rarely known a scholar to publish so much. I'll just flag up his books, The African Christian Diaspora, New Currents and Emerging Themes in World Christianity, and Celestial Church of Christ, The Politics of Cultural Identity in a West African Prophetic Charismatic Movement. And also he's edited quite a number of volumes, including Christianity in Africa and the African Diaspora, The Appropriation of a Scattered Heritage, and The Public Face of African New Religious Movements in Africa, which we had a book launch here for on the 30th of October. So you can find out much more on his webpage about that. So first off, Afe, welcome to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you.
It's been quite a while coming. We've been saying we need to get you on, but I'm very glad we have. Today we're going to be talking about, it's quite a broad topic of African Christianity in the West. Now, the idea is that this will tie in with an interview that we've potentially set up that will focus on African new religious movements in the West. And of course, I want to mention before we get going that this is not the whole story. You know, Africa isn't just Christianity and new religious movements. But for the sake of time and for podcasts, you know, we're going to focus today specifically on African Christianity in the West. Yeah. But hopefully we'll problematize some of those terms. So, but before we even talk about African Christianity in the West, it would be helpful if we could start, you know, with African Christianity as a concept. Many people might think that you know, it's just, oh, since European missionaries went to Africa, but that's not the case, is it?
Yeah, I think it's, thanks for giving me this opportunity to share my thoughts. Well, I mean, the very concept African Christianity is a kind of invented concept, just to express the African appropriation of Christianity. And I think it's important to bear in mind that Christianity is not a new phenomenon, as many would think, in Africa. Actually, right from the so-called emergence of Christianity, it has implications for Africa, you know. So, although there's a sense in which we think of, you know, Christianity as a very modern new phenomenon, I think we need to look at the long durée of, you know, the history of Christianity in Africa right from its beginning.
Absolutely.
And just two examples, for instance. We often forget Ethiopian Christianity, which has been there right from the onset of Christianity, and which, to a large extent, can be said to be indigenous because, you know, there was not much of, you know, the foreign contact, just like the Europeanization of Christianity that we'll talk about today. But quickly, second point, many would not know North Africa, you know, as a Christian context, you know. And so that history seems to have been lost to the Islamization of Christianity. So to talk about Christianity generally in Africa, you know, to look at all these different imprints.
Absolutely. Well, maybe if you could just take us, because our focus today is going to be particularly on in the West, mm-hmm. but there's so much that we could talk about just in Africa, but mm-hmm. perhaps it would be helpful to talk about the whole mission experience and mm-hmm. things like that, just to contextualize it.
Well, I think what seems to be happening, we cannot understand Christianity in Africa in isolation, just as we cannot understand African Christianity in West in isolation, because what seems to be happening is what may be described as, you know, African Christianity strikes back.
Mm.
Because what has happened in the past is a whole way of looking at how European brand of Christianity was introduced to different parts of Africa.
Mm.
But how has it grown in time and space? And I think one way in which it has grown is this kind of African appropriation of European Christianity.
Mm.
So what we are essentially referring to African Christianity is not simply a totally African brand of Christianity,
absolutely.
But really the African interpretation of European nice forms of Christianity.
Mm.
Yes.
Perhaps before we get any further as well, we should flag up this the term African, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's a huge continent,
yeah.
with as we know, a whole variety of mm-hmm. different expressions mm-hmm. of Christianity and other religious traditions.
Yeah.
So what is there a sort of core that you can say is distinctly African, like a type of Christianity, or what, you know, what makes African Christianity distinctive?
Yes, I think it's the same kind of thing we might apply to Christianity as a concept,
mm-hmm.
to suggest there's one Christianity is very problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So to talk about African Christianity, I would like more to talk about African Christianities.
Yes.
And these are different brands, you know, it varies from, you know, what we call the African indigenous churches to, you know, the mission type churches,
mm-hmm.
to the Pentecostal charismatic variety, to the Orthodox Christianity in Ethiopia, and so on and so forth. So these are all many faces of Christianity. Why do we talk about African Christianities? I think it's simply a descriptive term to bring together these multiple perspectives, you know, multiple dynamics and dimensions of Christianity in Africa. We do not in any way suggest that there's a kind of homogeneity.
Yeah.
So this is the point. But as a descriptive label, I actually like to talk about African Christianities.
Yeah.
What is distinctive? What is distinctive needs to be seen at the same time with what commonalities they share with other brands of Christianity.
Absolutely.
And perhaps what is distinctive is the way in which African spiritualities, African indigenous spiritualities, take a center stage in the understanding and the interpretation of Christianity.
Right.
Because Christianity doesn't make sense except in terms of its domestication,
yeah.
in each, you know, local context. So simply talking about African Christianity, we are looking at the domestication of, you know, of Christianity using the lens, you know, of different African societies and cultures, you know, and worldviews, which is very complex in itself.
Absolutely. And here the listeners will be seeing how looking at something that seems very specific, you know, from the title African Christianity, you know, is of relevance to the study of religion and religions in general, you know.
Yes, I think it makes a lot of sense to talk about African Christianities today, because if you look at the historiography of the discipline, there has been that, you know, tendency to relegate, you know, the place of, you know, this appropriation of Christianity from a very negative perspective.
Mm.
And often in public discourse, African forms of Christianity are not seen as authentic.
No.
So it raises very important questions about authenticity.
Mm.
Who has the right, you know, to say what brand of Christianity is correct or authentic or not? And I think it's against this backdrop that scholars are beginning to say that we need to pay attention to you know, whatever it's called, African Christianity, within the wider global, you know, discourse on religions and Christianity in particular.
Absolutely, and hopefully towards the end, if we manage to keep to time, we'll get on to some of those misconceptions or images of that African Christianity that are quite prevalent. But maybe if we could now get more towards the West then. So before we can talk about African Christianity in the West, we really need to talk about the interaction of the history between Africa and the West. So maybe if you could just tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I think this opens the question regarding, you know, Christianity and globalization. I think the connection between the West and Africa has been a very complicated one, you know, which, you know, can lead back to, you know, questions of colonial hegemony and so on and so forth. And that partly has shaped this kind of the kind of revisitation of Christianity by Africans and actually bringing it back to the West in itself.
Yeah.
And I think migration and the colonial hegemony are strong, you know, variables that impact on the connection between Africa and the West. West in this case, of course, specifically, maybe talking about Europe in this initial instance.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to see, you know, the connections, because Christianity or new forms of Christianity was introduced to different African societies. And what we are experiencing now is a kind of backlash, you know, and partly because of new media technologies, but also the role of immigrants, African immigrant communities in the West.
Yeah. Mm. So we have a situation where European missionaries went to Africa, bringing various forms of Christianity with them. Some of that was welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that was strongly reacted against. We had, I'm remembering back to the days when I took your course on you Indigenous movements, which was in 2009, I think. So I'm a bit hazy, but and there would be some congregations who would, you know, attend mission churches. Others would break away with African leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Other congregations would form completely separate from these mission churches. But moving to the contemporary Europe, probably is what we're going to be talking about mostly. So we have situations where there are large numbers now, well, large. There are African communities across Europe who have brought these various forms of Christianity with them. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about that sort of spread, the timelines that go along with that.
Yes, I think it's interesting that Africans first responded to the kind of Europeanized forms of Christianity that we have, you know, as early as the most noticeably in the 19 the era following the decolonization process.
Yeah.
What we continue to witness is the African response to the global discourse on Christianity.
Mm.
And one of those responses kind of came out clearly, not just simply in the way in which African immigrants are reintroducing, you know, Christianity to the West, but I think it's very important for us to look at the rationale. What kind of rationale do they have, you know, to do what they are doing? But of course, there are further questions whether they are succeeding in doing what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So in comparing, you know, mission, Christian missionary enterprise, you know, in the colonial period and now, it suggests that history is simply replaying itself.
Right.
And European missionaries during that era, used to demonize Africa, you know, as a dark continent, and using that to build a legitimacy for their missionary enterprise. Mm. And modern day missionaries, so-called, are using the same kind of terminologies, describing Europe as a dark continent.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to perhaps interrogate a bit more. Why is history playing itself? What kind of justification are they coming up with, you know, to bring Christianity back to its former heartland, you know? I think these are very important issues that my work is interrogating.
Yeah.
Just to ask further questions about whether they are succeeding or failing. But I think it raises quite a lot of important issues, you know, comparing that era with now. Mm. For instance, you talk about agency.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you talk about to what extent missionaries, the missionary enterprise at that point was backed with the colonial apparatus. So question of power becomes important. So in present day, do they have that kind of power? You know, the whole question of the next Christendom.
Yeah.
Whether this is a mirage, because actually, to be able to assess the failure and success of this, you know, two different enterprise needs to be contextualized.
Hmm. On that topic of contextualization, then, it might help if we took this sort of quite big, broad conversation and maybe focused in on a particular case study, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I know your PhD work was with the Celestial Church of Christ, mm-hmm. but maybe you have another example just to illustrate some of these dynamics that you've been talking about.
Yes, I think what came out quite clearly in my earlier research on the Celestial Church of Christ, but also quite recently in my work on some Pentecostal churches, is the whole dynamic of reverse mission, which has become a very important point to think with. Because modern missionaries are now, you know, using that rhetoric of reverse mission and saying that, look, the West is becoming more and more secularized.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, this is one of the ways in which these religious practitioners are contributing to the debate on secularization in the West.
Mm.
And they are kind of pointing to all kinds of indicators, you know, like dwindling church membership and, you know, churches being turned into pubs and bookshops and all that, and saying, look, we have a task here, you know. So in a way, this helps them to reposition their task. But what is very interesting is how these religious communities are actually, you know, kind of coming up with strategies. Strategies of expansion, in a way that some of the so-called missionaries are supported financially. Although, as compared to earlier missionary enterprise, where you do have, you know, mission societies like Edinburgh Mission Society or Glasgow Mission Society or London Missionary Society, we don't have that kind of strategy just now. But it's interesting to see how this local churches in different parts of Africa are consciously thinking about not just the West, but also Africans in the West, you know, as a way of kind of remissionizing what they consider, because it's one question whether what they consider is right or not, you know, what they consider to be a secularizing society. And they think that as global players, in as much as they are also local players, they have a role within the global religious scene.
Mm.
And this is what they are working towards by not only establishing branches, you know, in different parts of the West, but much more importantly, they are beginning to take on public role.
Yeah.
And this is against the backdrop of most of these churches registering as charity bodies.
Yeah.
So in a way, they are conscious globally, but they also engage in issues of global consciousness at the same time.
Hmm.
And I think this really raises the question why their place and role in the West becomes more and more important. But it, just to end at that point, their role in the West cannot be understood except when linked to, you know, their role and place in on the African continent. And yeah. I think this raises quite important questions about the globalization of religious traditions.
Yeah. So how does that that connection to Africa play out in the West? Because, you know, the stereotypical thought would be that if a movement were to emerge in the West of an African origin, over time it'll become less African, or, you know, so are there links being maintained? Is there an Africanization of quote Western unquote Christianity happening?
Well, I think there's a negotiation process that is actually taking place, because if you look at these different, you know, Christian groups that exist in the West, they are of two types, at least. They are those that still have their international headquarters, you know, back in Africa. They are still responsible to their international headquarters, whether in terms of belief system or in terms of ritual practice. But at the same time, you have those who have started here, maybe in London or in Glasgow, and have their international headquarters here. But they are feeding back, you know, to Africa.
Yeah.
So in a way, there's that kind of transnational dimension that has come up in a very interesting way. In a way that what I see from my research is that most of these groups are always negotiating, you know, resilience of their indigenous worldviews, you know, at the same time looking at how they can adapt and integrate to the new society. So it's not a one-way situation.
Absolutely.
But this this kind of negotiation process in itself is very interesting, you know. How and to what extent would they want to say, well, this is something African that we want to sell to the Western world, you know. At the same time saying, yes, well, we are in a new society. So that negotiation process can be an intricate but very interesting one. So this is part of what I explore in my work.
And absolutely bound up there with, as you say, globalization and information technology, which, you know, is something that's ever-changing. This is already time is already flying past. But I want to maybe touch on the public perceptions of African Christianity in the West, because I, again, this not being my field, I would say at best the public perception is probably nothing, you know, negligible at best. At worst, people might think of the African bishops of the Anglican Church opposing things that the Church of England are trying to do, or they'll think of, there are always a couple of horror stories that get blown all out of proportion, you know, so maybe if you could.
Yeah, I think on the whole, the public, you know, perception of African Christianity cannot be, you know, disentangled from the public perception of Africa as a continent, and Africans as people. And I think there's a very negative, you know, a very dark side to it. And that implicates on how African churches are seen. For instance, the larger public do not perceive African churches to be Christian. There's the whole debate about, no, well, what they do is African. As if you could disentangle what is Africa from what is Christian. And that raises larger question about European Christianity, if there's anything like that.
Yeah, because I don't perceive the European nature.
Yes. And Christianity as practiced in the past and now in Europe is almost totally enmeshed in European cultures. You know, so I think the important point, I think, which actually shapes the relationship between African churches and European churches, permit me to use this African European, is that there's not quite a rapport. There's not quite a conversation because of this kind of negative perception of the other. Because the question that usually emerges is, Yes, we are not sure this Christianity that is being practiced by Africans in diverse ways is actually Christian.
Mm.
So question of hegemony jumps up almost immediately.
Absolutely.
And I think it raises wider question for us. And the major question is, which Christianity is authentic and which is not? Who decides? And I think it's an important point. But I think that all traditions, you know, all aspects of Christianity in different contexts have something to say. They have something to contribute to the wider debate. That's why, for instance, some brands of African Christianity cannot be pushed aside today in debates about same-sex and gay priesthood. And for instance, these brands of Christianity have actually shaken the very foundation of global Anglicanism. And that says something. But I think it's important to see how else, beyond this exoticness, you know, that African Christianities are contributing, not just to the global debate, but also to other kinds of global processes.
A sort of double question then on that. Are we, because there's an academic discourse at the moment about sort of a shift of power in Christianity from, you know, the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere. And but that's also brings to mind there are so many thousands of denominations of Christianity within the continent of Africa. So if we talk about a shift in power, which, you know, there demonstrably is in terms of numbers and growing influence, is there a form of, is there unity there? Like, you know, does African Christianity, in quotation marks, work as a whole, or you know, when it's in the West, do they work, do the African churches work together, or is there a lot of division? You know, how does that
dynamic? No, that's an important question, but I think this is a question we can stretch to all parts of the world.
Yeah.
I don't see, you know, all brands of Christianity in Scotland working together, you know, just in the same way. And I think that comes when we talk about the varieties of Christianities, you know, in these different contexts. But at the same time, I think while looking at how divided they are, there are points of connections. There are ecumenical bodies, you know, that bring together quite a lot of these groups. For instance, several African churches are part of the World Council of Churches, which is more the global body. But within Africa, if you talk about the African indigenous churches, for instance, they have organization of African indigenous churches. You know, if you look at Catholics, you look at, you know, Anglicans, you look at all kinds of different brands, even the Ethiopian churches.
Yeah.
So while they are very varied, there are points of commonalities, there are points, you know, associations that bring them together, even to represent a kind of a political wing of Christianity against, you know, the interface of Islam and other religions. So in that, looking at that kind of construction, therefore, I think they are playing visible roles in their own right. Like Anglican Communion in Africa, they have a collective voice, just like Catholics do have, just like the Organization of African Indigenous Churches. But we are not in any way suggesting that there's a one umbrella of Christian, because that would be a theological statement.
Absolutely. And as we're already running pretty much out of time, but I guess a final question would be, clearly there's a lot of worth in, you know, let's say bracketing off African Christianity and studying it as such, but is there a risk in that, you know, by saying, you know, that this is African Christianity, that we're sort of perpetuating that that same thing that you were mentioning about people not considering it, you know, real Christianity? You know, what's the future? Would the future for researching African Christianity in the West or in Africa be to stop using the label altogether, or, you know, like, how do you?
Well, I think, yes, you have a point here, that it's very critical. But at the same time, I think to de-emphasize the Africanness would be to anonymize, you know, these communities, because in the very first place, they were not recognized,
you know,
as being in existence. So to suggest African Christianity is a way of bringing them into the academic limelight.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we have to be very reflexive,
yeah,
you know, on what this means. To suggest African Christianity doesn't actually mean a brand of Christianity that is typified by Africans.
Yeah.
You do have non-Africans who are members. But I think what is important is to see to what extent African Christianities are similar and different from other varieties of Christianity, and to what extent they interact, you know.
Yeah.
I think that is the most important point. Otherwise, I mean, these terminologies are emptying themselves.
Yeah.
So, to a large extent, using them as a descriptive label can be quite helpful, you know, just to see how they are African and non-African, and vice versa.
Yeah. And maybe the sort of the contextuality that comes with that label, the positive outcome, to my mind, would be that we start referring to British Christianities and Italian Catholicism and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, that specificity is hidden within the hegemony of Western dominance over what Christianity means, or, you know, Protestant, what that means. Whereas if we took every instance of when we refer to Christianity and added the specifics of what context we're talking about.
I think, yes, that tendency to homogenize, you know, can be very problematic, you know, because that doesn't enable us to see, you know, the varieties, the complexities within a singular context. But in this case, for instance, using African Christianity enables us not just to see the homogeneity, but also the heterogeneity of these different traditions. And I think we can use that kind of template in looking at the different brands of Christianities in Europe, because, you know, British Christianity would not be the same exactly as German Christianity.
Absolutely.
But they have points of convergence and divergence. And so talking about that homogeneity is used in a much more complex and reflexive sense to look at divergences and convergences in a way that enables us to get a bigger picture, of what this kind of religious traditions are and what shapes them. Because each of these traditions is shaped by all kinds of, you know, factors, you know, contextual factors, you know, political, economic, social, and cultural factors. And we can only look into each one to, you know, unpack these complexities. And this is what, you know, using the template African Christianity enables us to do just now.
Absolutely. Well, that was a whirlwind discussion, of necessity, really. But I hope this won't be the last time that we have you on the podcast, Alfie. And if any of our listeners do want to delve into any of that in any more detail, they can look at any number of your book chapters and articles, and see some of these dynamics playing out in specific cases. And
okay. No, thanks for this opportunity, and I hope, it will be useful to someone.
It should be.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, too.
Thanks so much for that interview, Chris. We've been meaning to interview Afi since we started the project, and it's taken us almost 4 years. Can you believe this?
I can. Well, I can because it's happened. But yeah, it was really good that we got to speak to him. In the interview there, I alluded to it was potentially going to be like a two-parter with another interview on African indigenous traditions. That hasn't happened as of yet, but hopefully there'll be, you know, future interviews that'll tie into that theme.
Hopefully still, yes. I mean, we're going with the same kind of system that we did last year, rather than having long runs of themed episodes. We're going to spread a couple of themes out throughout the year. Not quite sure what those themes are shaking down for this year so far, but we've got a lot of interesting stuff coming up this year.
Absolutely. The next sort of 10 weeks are already in the bag, as it were, and we'll tell you more about those in due course. right now, we should maybe just tell you a little bit about a bit of reshaping of the RSP team that's been going on.
Well, indeed, yeah. We every year during the holiday, we change up and reorganise the editorial team, make sure it's fresh, make sure everybody's happy with what they're doing, maybe move some people around, and we've just finished that process for this year. So many of the team are staying the same. Obviously, our good selves are remaining where we are in our lofty ivory towers.
Yeah, steering the ship.
To help us out with that, we've got
Daniel Favand, or Favand, I'm never quite sure.
Favand, I think. Yeah.
He's come on as like, well, I describe his role as sort of like a producer would be in the movie industry or in theatre, but instead he's our managing editor of really the RSP, not just the podcast, not just the website, but overseeing and managing a variety of outputs that we've got in the pipeline and the outputs that we currently have.
And well, last year Dan was helping us with the audio editing, but when we started on another project, we realised that his skills were being wasted. So we've moved him to this position where the great strength of what he's doing is he's able to look at the project from outside in a way that we can and tell us what we're doing wrong.
Absolutely.
So he's been a great asset so far. And coming in on audio, we have a friend of his called Cole
Gleason, who is at McGill University in Montreal. And Dan is now living in Montreal, so we're adding to our Canadian contingent. So welcome, Cole.
Talking of Canadian contingent, Martin LePage is staying on board, helping us with the archives, and he's going to be taking over the journal pages and the web resources and things like that, which we've discovered turns out are quite popular with you guys.
Yeah. A lot of you might know us through our social media feeds, and up until this point, that was being co-managed by Chris Silver and Tommy Coleman was, you know, very much at the spearhead on that.
And
Tommy's been a real trooper this past year on the social media, and this year he's going to be trying his hand at being a sort of conference manager, being in charge of the RSP's presence at conferences the world over, coordinating interviews, conference reports, advertising at those conferences, and just generally trying to get us more embedded in the academic culture. We're quite embedded here in the UK in the British Association for the Study of Religions, who remain as our primary sponsor. But we would like to increase that with other organisations, and Tommy is going to be spearheading that. So.
When we've been involved with other conferences, it's been largely on an ad hoc basis because one of us knew one of the organisers or they reached out to us for whatever reason. Personally, but we wanted to formalise that a little bit more within the organisation. So I will ask if any of the listeners are attending conference that you'd like to report on or are helping to organise, do get in touch with us because it may be that one of us can come down if you can facilitate that, or if we have people there already, we can certainly organise reports, interviews there. If you have something you would particularly like to see a report on from us, we can probably help organise that too. So do get in touch.
Absolutely.
At the usual address, which is editors@religiousstudiesproject.com.
And I should say that all this information is on our team page, which you can access through the main site. Taking over the social media role then
is Venetia Robertson from the University of Sydney. She's been a friend of ours for a while. She's written a couple of conference reports. Seems to, I think, understands our kind of sensibility to a great deal. Her work focused mostly on the Theranthropy movement, so people who identify as animals and fictional and mythical creatures, which is very interesting, kind of cutting-edge work. But I think she's going to be really good on the social media. It'll be great to have, you know, no discredit to Tommy's absolutely sterling work, but it's going to be interesting to see a different head on those particular shoulders.
Because as we're well aware, our own, you know, much as we try and keep ourselves sort of agenda-free, our own agendas do come through in the interviews that we do, in the things that we post on social media, the reports that we write and things. So keeping, this is one of the reasons that we like to keep the team
as fresh as
I mean, everybody's going to bring a slightly different flavour to the role. Tommy's got obviously interest in psychology of religion and also cognitive study of religion, but of course that's only one angle in the contemporary socio-critical study of religion that we're interested in. So it would be interesting to see which particular flavour Venetia brings. Is there anybody else who's changing that we haven't mentioned?
Well, Kevin is doing a sterling job of the features and he's staying.
We're lucky
there
to get Kevin to continue doing his sterling job. Jana on the Ops Digest.
And Knut, where would we be without Knut? And we wouldn't have a website. Now I'm getting paranoid that we haven't mentioned someone. In addition to the editorial team, sort of consolidation, we're also greatly expanding our team of interviewers, because as the project has grown, so too have the editorial responsibilities. So we wanted to free the editors up from also having to do interviews, although many will still be doing them, and you know, you'll definitely hear a lot from Tommy over the coming weeks. But we've got a few new interviewers coming into the mix. We'll introduce them as time progresses. But as ever, if you, any of our listeners out there feel that, you know, you could be contributing in this way, you know, get in touch with us. We don't rule anything out.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't be intimidated, we're pussycats really. And we're, you know, we want to hear from the audience. That's what we're here for.
Should probably wrap up this one because we've been talking quite a bit. Next week we'll tell you a bit about the interviews that are coming up and things like that. Next week's interview is one that Tommy recorded at the NSRN conference back in November. It's with Phil Zuckerman and John Shook on secular studies. That's all very much in quotation marks, of course. So thanks to the BASR. Remember our Amazon links. Particularly if you are in the US and Canada, you can still use our Amazon links if you go through the main website. You know, we'd like to see more from the US. And keep following us on social media.
Thanks for listening.